Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. This is episode number 85. My name is Willie Dills. We are 20 games into the season, and we're ready to talk about some Giants baseball. It's been a much better week since the boys were last with you. The boys I'm talking about are, of course, my co-hosts who are with me right now. Mr. Chad King, first, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, welcome back, Willie. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I missed, I missed two episodes now. Was it two? You guys did two without me, right?
Yeah, we did two in a row, yep.
All right, cool. Well, I'm glad to be back on the show. Last week, my voice was gone because I won the golf tournament that me and you played at, Chad.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't my fault. That was the fault of the 81 I shot and the massive amounts of whiskey I had afterwards and the massive amounts of yelling I did. But anyway, glad to be back on the show.
Yeah, damn your golf game. I shot like a 195 or something.
We bookended the tournament. I don't know if you know this.
I finished
first and you finished dead last.
There you go.
You were actually, that was the one thing you were worried about. You're like, I'm going to finish last, man. This sucks.
I've never finished last. I know. Well,
and
in
I was
my
like,
whole
no,
four tournaments.
There's always going to be somebody worse. The guy, you lost him by two strokes. Somebody actually did shoot like a 131 or something like that.
Yeah, I know which hole that I screwed it up on. So we won't talk about
15?
That. It was the 15.
Yeah. We also have with us Eric Nathanson. What's up, man? Welcome back to the show, Eric.
Not much. I'm just enjoying laughing at Chad's golf game.
Yeah.
Well, see,
normally I'm not that bad. I'm bad, but
Chad's
not that bad.
Chad actually makes really good contact, but he starts every round by topping the ball for about four or five holes.
Yeah, I'd say about five holes. Worm burners all over the place.
I really believe that it's just because of your history as more of a baseball player, and you have this tendency to do what a baseball player does, which is during the swing.
It's a straight front leg.
Straighten the leg.
Yeah, it's a straight front leg.
That's exactly the wrong thing to do in golf because you want to stay... Even you want to keep your head straight where it is and stay even through the ball.
Yeah, come up on it.
And
yeah, by the way, I mean
you stand up after contact.
Yeah, so. you were great. You were giving me pointers and everything like that. You're not a PGA professional, but I did take some of your tips and they were helping a lot. But you know, once you go kind of downhill and you're shooting nothing but eights and nines in the first five holes,
it starts to wear on you.
You're kind of cemented to where you're going to go. So, but anyway,
that round was crazy for me.
I go for fun. You know that.
Yeah, exactly. That round was crazy for me because I'm usually pretty bad myself. I'm like, I'm decent. I'll shoot in like the mid 90s most of the time. But for whatever reason, I just slowed down my backswing and that was the only real change I made.
Yeah.
And I shot a 38 on the back nine.
Woo.
That's crazy, 38. Man. That's insane. Yeah.
Well, I remember that one. I think it was a 5-wood, maybe it was a 3-wood. You hit on a par 3.
Oh, the
long
uphill par
3.
Three.
Oh.
Yeah.
You three nailed that sucker. Right between the bunkers, right onto the green within whatever, how many feet. I mean, that was insane.
And then I missed the putt. But
well, yeah, but you still got three.
NGA. All right, well, we're here to talk about the Giants and not my golf.
Not
game,
golf.
But that was an exciting moment for me. 81 is the tie for the best round I've ever shot. But the Giants have seriously turned things around since the last time we did a show, or you guys did a show. The Giants, I believe the last time you guys did a show, were sitting on a one for their last 10. So 1-9 over their last 10 record. Since that time, they have gone 4-1, three game sweep over the Dodgers, and 1-1 split against the Rockies, where one of the games got rained out. Was it rain or was it like? I guess it was just a rain out, right? It wasn't like a storm or anything.
I think it was like, you know, locust swarm or something. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Just the beginning of the apocalypse. No big deal.
Yeah.
But so 4-1 since that time. I mean, that feels like a pretty significant turnaround. And Eric, what do you think? What was the key for a team that was struggling so hard to go into that series with the Dodgers, which is the Dodgers came in red high? I think they'd won 7 in a row. How did the Giants suddenly find something in themselves to turn that around? What was the key to that series?
I really have no idea. It looks like it looks like last year when they beat the Cardinals a couple times, and you just kind of expected it to happen. It was kind of the same thing. Justin Maxwell is like the only thing that's different, you know. So other than the starting pitching, I really have no idea. They suddenly looked like a good team after looking like such a crappy team for 2 weeks.
They didn't suddenly dump a bunch of runs on the board or anything.
No.
Just kind of won some close, good baseball games, right? It was just kind of locking down and not making a bunch of mistakes and just getting a few runs across.
Well, they had two walk-offs. So, I mean, you know,
those two
games could have gone either way. And, you know, the Giants definitely, after Crawford, you know, led off that inning with the triple to knock in the run to tie the game, he got stranded at third with nobody out. So,
oh, that's right. He was on third with nobody out and didn't actually
things
get
like
across.
That hurt. I mean, they ended up winning that game. That's fine, but it's
the thing
it's
is usually
like that
means we lose.
Yeah,
like that's,
usually.
Yeah, or at least the way things were going at that point, and you don't get the guy in from third with nobody out, that's kind of indicative of why we were losing, right? That game we ended up getting away with it. So I guess it wasn't pretty, but the job got done ultimately in the end, right? We also had some like kind of cool stuff. We had the squeeze bunt play, which was actually it was a safety squeeze, right? Aoki wasn't breaking on the pitch,
correct.
If I remember.
Yeah, it didn't look. Yeah, he came late,
and he had to actually slide under the tag because the bunt was actually kind of a pop up bunt. It went pretty far down the first base line, and just speed and being able to make a good. He made an outside slide there and was able to score. So that was a big play too, but. Definitely a risky one, but this is the way the Giants are going to have to score, right? I mean, we just don't have the pop. We don't have the big boys who are going to be knocking in three runs with crooked numbers and big three-run homers.
Nope.
They're going to have to scratch and claw for these runs. But I think the real key here was taking a Dodgers team and kind of deadening their bats. We were able to slow them down, and that's still, even without Kemp and some of the other changes they made, that's a scary Dodgers team still, right?
Yeah, they were like leading the league in offense when they came in to face the Giants. So it was an accomplishment to actually slow that team down. They'd won seven straight.
Yeah,
when
they had
came
won
into
seven straight,
series.
And so I mean that was
clicking
great.
Right along,
it was great to
not
just
to mention
shut down the juggernaut.
We beat Kershaw and Greinke in the same series too. So it's not like we saw the back end of their rotation. I mean, we went through the top. You know.
Yeah.
Big stuff. Obviously. You know, Bumgarner had been scuffling a little bit, and he came out and actually looked a little bit more like Bumgarner. Interesting stat on that game. That was the first time the NL MVP had ever gone against the World Series MVP in a game. That was kind of an interesting little historical moment in baseball history.
It's eventually going to happen, right?
Yeah, one of these days it'll happen.
140 years of baseball. Gonna happen.
But it's kind of crazy that that's
but
the
it was cool.
time that ever happened, especially if you consider, you know, the history of baseball. There used to be less teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the teams would play each other more, obviously. There would be you got like a really good I guess it just took the fact that there's more teams getting to the playoffs maybe because maybe, you know, in the 40s, 50s, early times of baseball, yeah, the MVP would probably come off the team that was getting to the World Series most of the time, you know, so you wouldn't see like the Dodgers. They got to the playoffs. They legitimately could have an MVP candidate.
Yeah. And I think now with Interleague, I think even though this wasn't an Interleague matchup, I think it's going to happen more often.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times you're going to have an AL guy against an NL guy.
So it won't take 140 years for it to happen again.
Don't think
saying?
So. Okay. Don't think so.
Also, the thing is, a pitcher has to win MVP. That's another part of this equation. That's pretty tough to. I mean, that's
a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah. There's got to be somebody out there that already they faced in a batter pitcher combination.
Yeah, the batter pitcher things happened for sure. Yeah, tons of times for sure. But the pitcher having to win the MVP. Have we ever talked about that on this show? Are you guys pro pitchers winning MVPs?
You know, with Kershaw's year and no one standing out offensively like a Bonzian type of year, I would have voted for him. But I mean, exactly what you said, it's an exception to the rule. I think that it's just something that you have to be so far above the competition, including the hitters. You know, you can't give the MVP to a guy who hit, what did Giancarlo hit, you know, 40 home runs or whatever. You know, this day and age, home runs are down, pitching stats are up, right? Well, they're really down, but up in terms of how good they are. So I just think he had just an exceptional year, and I think you got to give it to him.
I feel like there is an argument to be made for we have an award just for pitchers. We don't have MVP just for, you know, hitters.
But. Yeah, it would be something if it was like not a Silver Slugger award, because that's just for the position, but if it was like MVP of hitters, you know,
best hitter. Yeah, like best hitter and side, yeah.
Most so valuable hitter, you know,
called the Barry Bonds Award, although they have that, but the, you know, the Willie Mays Award or something like that.
MVB, most valuable batter.
The Ted Williams Award. There you go.
Something like that.
Well, that wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, yeah, that would be that'd be all right. But you know, it's it is an argument that comes up periodically of people who are, you know, a little bit kind of butthurt that a pitcher gets to take down the Cy Young and the MVP at the same time. I don't know.
In the context of a season, it happens sometimes.
Well, I'm going to segue just for a second. I know we don't want to go too long, and I made our last podcast too long by taking too many tangents. But did you see?
Feel free, tangent away.
Did you see Mad Bum's quote about you know, about Max Scherzer and other guys who have been getting hurt lately?
In terms of, no, what did he say?
Who was it that just busted their Achilles? I'm blanking out on the pitcher.
Adam Wainwright.
Adam Wainwright. Thank you.
Okay.
You know, former
he's like
Cy Young.
Injured every year, though, isn't
well,
he?
Well, yeah, but not. This is from a hitting perspective.
Oh, okay.
So Max Scherzer, of course, came out after Adam Wainwright busted his Achilles tendon. He's out for the year, and he did it while he was hitting. He came out of the box,
wow,
looked like he got
whole
shot.
Year,
jeez. Yeah, he did.
No,
yeah.
He's gone. And obviously, he's their ace, and he's a Cy Young contender.
Yeah.
And that's going to really hurt the Cardinals' chances.
That's,
of course,
the Cardinals are supposed to be the odd year guys. What
yeah, that's
hell,
right.
Man?
I know they're not going to live up to, you know? Can still do it. But anyway, Scherzer came out very strongly saying that, you know, it's things like this that this is why we need the DH for the National League. And Mad Bum basically came out and said he could have signed anywhere he wanted to. If he didn't want to hit, he could have signed with the American League team. Basically, shut up. This is the game we play. It's a beautiful game. I don't want the DH to come into the National League. And I loved reading those quotes because I definitely consider myself a purist for the most part, and I never want to see the DH in the National League. And I don't care if Mad Bum next start goes down and he busts his Achilles while batting. I will
shit.
I know, right? Knock on wood. I will still stand behind the fact that once the DH, and I think it's inevitable, I think it will happen eventually. It may not be this year, next year, or 5 years from now, but I think eventually the DH is going to be implemented in the National League, and I'm going to cry a little bit if and when that happens.
I hope it goes the other way, man. I hope they just get rid of the damn thing.
That's not going to happen. That's not,
no, but
that's not going to happen.
It sucks because, yeah, we've got players who are essentially made by the fact that they can be a DH, right? But you know, this game, it's a 9-on-9 game as far as I'm concerned. And just,
yeah, no, absolutely.
It's like as if you could say, well, Shaq's not very good at free throws. So, you know, when we come down on the offensive end, he gets a designated free thrower to come in when he gets fouled. So it just seems like, no, you should be able to hit the ball. Like you should be able to, and you should be a good enough athlete that swinging a bat isn't somehow a life-threatening situation to be in. Like, you're a professional athlete, man. Like having to swing a bat means that you might just fall apart at any moment. Like that's,
yeah, Mad Bum said a few other things like, so what if he gets injured while he's driving his truck? Does that mean he shouldn't drive?
Yeah, so he said designated driver for all baseball players.
Yeah, like, so he went through a few examples like that. By the way, the Dodgers just hit a 3-run bomb.
I know. That's actually why I said, well, shit.
This game's over. Anyway, we'll move on.
But no,
well, I was going to say, I actually disagree with you guys. I'm ready for the DH and everything in the National League. And it's not because I'm worried about people getting hurt. I just think that you need to just get everybody playing the same game or not at all. And there's no way in hell they're going to take it away.
So if you had your preference, would you prefer no DH at all or DH in both?
Yeah. If I had my preference, I'd prefer no DH all across. Yeah. But I really think they should just convert to the DH and give them 26-man rosters.
Well, then
it solves the problem of, you know, screwing up pitching staffs and, you know, shortening benches and things like that.
Well, don't you think right now, I mean, I'm not saying the numbers prove this out, but do you think the National League on average has an advantage over the American League because of the fact that their pitchers can hit better than the American League pitchers? Or do you think with free agency, that's kind of the moot point now?
I think the American League has an advantage because they get to send 9 major league hitters to the plate every single game.
Oh, no, I mean if they face each other in
the
National League.
Yeah,
or they face each other in the
series. No, I don't think
I actually think American League has an advantage because they actually have a guy who's a DH on their team while the National League has to scramble to find somebody.
I totally agree. That's
like, we got lucky that we had Michael Morris, right? But
yeah,
most National League teams aren't going to have a guy like that.
So basically, like, So, like, you know, the Red Sox have David Ortiz, right? So even if they don't start him at first, which normally they would, but let's just say someone like him, he's on the bench, right, for a pinch-hitting role, but the Giants or whomever else
Giants are chucking out some backup dude.
Utility infielder to be a pinch hitter in the
inning. And, I mean, the Giants this year could do something like Maxwell or something in the DH, right? Yeah. And that'd be fine, but most teams don't have – and sure, a good team is probably going to have some decent – you know, player on the bench that they can put in there who's like their best pinch hitter of the season. But then also you take their best pinch hitter and you put him in there and then you don't have that pinch hitting role later. But and also here's the other thing. It's boring as hell to watch designated hitters and what they do to the game of baseball. Because suddenly there's just no decisions on when you take the pitcher out. You just take him out when he's done. You don't have to worry about where his spot is in the lineup, which means that whole strategy section of managing, which is very important, is just gone. Double switches are gone. Your bench is essentially just waiting for someone to get hurt. There's no reason to ever pinch hit for somebody because you got your best nine guys out there anyway. Why the hell would you ever pinch? Like, why do you even have a bench? It's only there in case someone gets hurt or like a lefty instead of a righty in some certain situations. American League Baseball, I'm sorry. Like, it's boring to me. Like, it's boring to watch teams just throw the – here's our nine guys. Then we got one guy pitching. Then we switch him out whenever we feel like that's right. None of the actual permutations of the game, the lineup, and whatever matter.
Well, and I totally agree with you because I've heard this argument against that, saying that, well, it's purity, right? It's baseball. It's your best nine guys against their best nine guys. My argument is that if you look at the four major sports in North America, right, you have football. Are they making substitutions all the time on defense and
constant
offense?
Constant moving in and
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
It
basketball.
Affects the game in a huge way.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. You got your bench. You got rotations. You got small
lineups.
Yeah, you got
big lineups.
Small
lineup, big lineup, whatever.
You've got hockey. You've got all your lines, right? Yeah. You got to set those up, and they constantly change. Every one of those sports has kind of the strategy and planning and foresight of the manager or coach. In baseball, that's what the National League keeps. And I think that if you go to the American League lineup and the American League the way they manage right now, I'm not saying that you and I could be a great manager, but if we took over, you know, the Boston Red Sox, it's like, well, what was
the
lineup?
I know who the best nine guys.
Was the lineup last night? Okay, yeah, I'll just write that down.
Yeah.
And when a pitcher gets tired or if it's a righty on lefty with a couple guys on or whatever it is, I'll make a change. I'm just saying that I don't think you have to be a brain surgeon to be a manager in the American League.
No, and to me, when you're a fan of baseball, you're a fan of these types of situations where and I've, you know, a lot of times I've watched a game with someone who's maybe they like the Giants. They're decently into it, but they're like, why don't they just take Romo out or something because he's given up whatever? The reason they don't take Romo out is because his spot in the lineup is coming up next and we need to try to get him through this inning. That way we don't burn three pitchers trying to get through the, you know what I mean? Like that way we don't burn another pitcher and then another pitcher because they have to pinch hit for that pitcher when we could have just gotten Romo just get out of this inning and then, oh, but he gave up the run. It's like, well, yeah, but there's a reason why and it's subtle and it's interesting and people who love baseball and pay attention to that stuff can get that and appreciate it. People who don't give a crap anyway. It's like, whatever, you know. They just want to watch the guys hit the ball hard and stuff, you know. So, like, it's just you just lose a lot, I think.
I think it's going to happen.
It's just, it's to me, it's sad. And there's a lot of progress that I think has been positive. I think the double wild card has been positive. You know, I think adding teams has been positive. I think there's a lot of things that have been positive, but I think this would be a negative move. I think it was negative in the 70s when they changed the whole damn thing in the first place.
40 years ago, too, and we're still debating this.
1973.
Yeah. You know, I think baseball's gotten to a really good point now where we've gotten rid of like the crappy artificial turf and we've gotten rid of all this stuff that kind of made baseball this really ugly game that it was in the 80s and like the, you know, it, like some of that stuff has gone away. We're still missing some things. Like I think right now baseball is suffering from the best athletes in the world are now going off to play basketball and football and stuff. And so, you know, Hank Aaron might not have been a baseball player if he was born this era, right?
Yeah.
That's one thing I think baseball is missing out. It's especially like the black athletes and stuff. When we're still getting the best players from, you know, the Latin American countries because their basketball isn't king, right? But here in the States, it's like it's baseball's tough for kids who don't have a lot of money to play, right? So we're getting the best white and Latin players and we're missing all those great African-American players that we had for so long. That's the thing I think that's a problem in baseball. But
yeah, number
one league not having the DH.
Number one,
that's not something we need to fix.
Number one youth sport in America is soccer.
Soccer. And nobody goes off and plays it, by the way. That's just something to do.
Yep.
Something to pass some time.
Go send your fat kid to soccer.
Yeah, right. Let him run around for a little.
Well, the beauty of soccer when you're a kid, though, is that, like, baseball, you're just standing around a lot, right? Especially for these kids. So you're not getting as much of a workout as you get with soccer. And I think the reason why parents want their kids to play a sport is to just get out there and run around, you know? So soccer is a fantastic game for kids. You just run up and down the damn field the whole time. Like, when you watch little kids play soccer, it's just a moving mob of kids up and down the field. But they're constantly moving. And I think that's like, you know, when little kids play, that's, you just want to get them out there running, right? You, as a father, you can agree to that, right? Get the kids out there, get them running around. Yeah. It's like, you get the kids out playing baseball and they're standing around. You teach kids golf. Yeah, I don't know. Sports takes some concentration. Kids aren't the
best. So it makes baseball so beautiful. You can eat and be standing in left field.
You literally have a mouthful of stuff.
You're eating as you're standing out there playing sports.
That's, I always say this about baseball. That's what I love, is that it's a game where you stand around, and then when it's time to do something, you do it as hard as you possibly can every single time. So it's like, you know, with like basketball, you kind of like jog up and dribble the ball around a little bit, and then take a lazy jump shot. In baseball, there's, like, if you're doing something, you're going as hard as you can every single time you're doing it. You're chasing a ball down, you're running down the first baseline, you're swinging a bat. You don't swing at half speed sometimes because you just kind of feel like it. Like, you pitch, you're throwing as hard as you can. Even on a changeup, you're actually moving your arm at full speed because it has to look like a fastball. I don't, it's one of those things I really like about baseball that I don't think people talk about enough, is the bursts of full effort that baseball takes, right?
Like, you're just standing there, oh my God, my bus!
Take off. Yeah, then you run as fast as you can. Like, watch Hunter Pence just stand there and then suddenly go into full on run mode. Yeah. All right, so those were good tangents, Chad. I'm glad we did that because, you know, we don't have a lot of notes tonight. Get a little philosophical.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, so we're losing the Dodgers tonight. It's fine. Whatever. We beat them, we swept them. This is their comeback game. Let's talk about some of the big questions that the Giants have going forward. Pence is pretty close to getting back into, at least getting back into BP mode, I guess, if you will. So there was at one point hope that he would be back by like May 1st. That's not going to happen. But he's pretty much getting there too, as far as being able to start some simple baseball activities, right? So let's talk about what we think the outfield looks like once he comes back. Obviously, he's our right fielder. That's just, you know, Maxwell's done a pretty acceptable job, I think, as the right fielder in his absence. But Pence is coming in. He's going to be the right fielder. And Pagan hasn't gotten hurt yet, so he's our center fielder. So how do we mix? I mean, I think Maxwell's earned time, right? And I think Aoki's also earned time. So how do we manage the situation in left field? We've also, of course, got Blanco. So what do we do with this? Chad, how do you handle this if you're Bochy?
Yeah, I mean, Bochy's already come out and said that, you know, Maxwell, he's got the hot bat. You can't – he's definitely going to be on the team for a little while, even after Pence comes back. I mean, he's tied for the team lead with 3 home runs. He's hitting over 300. He made another amazing catch, which saved 2 runs tonight, although it doesn't matter now. But point being, he's been playing, you know, out of his pants, and so I don't think – you know, they can send him down, that's for sure. Aoki, of course, is hitting over 300. He's a little spark plug at the top of the lineup. So, again, you got to keep him in. Pagan is their natural center fielder, and so I think this is where we get the issue. And so which guy on your average starting lineup, and there's going to be nights where Pagan sits down, or Aoki, or Pence, or Maxwell. But as it sits right now, when Pence comes back, I mean, he's not going to be on the bench. We know this, right? I mean, he's going to be inserted right in whenever he's ready. So he's going to be in right field. I think right now, because Pagan is producing so well, he's doing fine. You got to keep him in center until he gets inevitably hurt. That will happen.
It'll take some sort of a triple or inside the park home run, but he will go down at some point.
He will go down at some point. So I think, you know, with Aoki and Maxwell, I think that's where the platoon happens. And, you know, obviously Blanco's going to be your fifth outfielder.
Yeah, I think Blanco will be the pinch runner, pinch hitter, pinch defense guy, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just going to be a matchup. It's going to be, you know, Maxwell's a righty, so it's, you know, he's going to get the majority of the left-handed starters which is, you know, only 2 out of 5 or something like that, 30-40% of the starts. And Aoki is going to get the others. So I think that's the way it's going to kind of line up right now. I don't see any other way. I don't know about you guys.
I think you're right on. I think they kind of work it out just by what their talents are naturally. You know, Aoki, if he is on the bench, he's a great pinch hitter, or pinch runner, because he can come in, he can get you like a leadoff hit in an inning where you need it, right? And if Maxwell's the guy on the bench, he's a guy who comes in as a pinch hitter when you've got runners on, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, with a little more pop. So it sets you up for a little bit of success. I don't think it's a bad problem to have.
No, but you said that. He said it's a good problem to have, you know?
So, Eric, who makes way, though?
Yeah, we didn't expect this problem.
Who makes way on the roster? Like, not as far as the outfielders go, but who do we send down?
Well, everybody would love to get rid of Arias, right?
He hasn't looked great.
It's not possible. I can't see them losing
the
Matt
problem
Duffy.
Is we have Duffy and we have Arias, and that's it, right? And so
pretty much
you need a couple of guys who can be, you know, I think it's going to be
it could be Susak, but
yeah,
I
think Sanchez.
Really? You think Susak Sanchez stays?
I think Susak stays.
I mean, Sanchez has hitting 120, so, you know.
Well,
sure.
It has nothing to do with that. I mean, sure, you know, small sample size, but I just think Sanchez has been with this team for a long time. He's proven valuable, don't get me wrong, and he's Timmy's personal catcher, although Susak went with Timmy tonight. So I think he can kind of supplement that. But he's proved himself a good hitter and an admirable defender. I just think, you know, he's either trade bait or he's DFA'd.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
You think Hector's trade bait?
I do. They're not going to get much for him. Don't get me wrong.
No, you're not going to get much for him, but could get somebody. I don't know.
I've been thinking Susak had been the trade bait, but, I mean, it's like he's trying to force his way into the lineup. And you're right, Bochy seems to be responding to him too. Yeah. Willie, you mentioned it before the show. We've seen Buster Posey at first base quite a bit, and lately it's just because Susak is forcing his way into the lineup.
Yeah, it's actually true. So, yeah, we looked it up, and Posey's played, was it 9 games at first base? Not all of them starts, but...
Yeah, something like that, but at least 7 or 8 of them have to be starts.
At 20, that's, yeah, at least 7 or 8. So, I mean, that's a pretty big chunk for Buster Posey as your starting catcher. And I really think that does, yeah, so Susak's got 5 games down there at the catcher spot.
I just think we know
300, or he's at almost 400, and he's got a home run.
I think you're right. I think Hector's the odd man out. The guy hasn't started a game in like 2 weeks.
Well, we know who he is. He's a known commodity, and he's not going to surprise. He's not going to come out and hit 400 with 20 bombs or anything like that. He's not fast. He's a good defender.
He's Hector. Yeah.
Yeah, he's Hector. Yeah, so
he's baby panda, and
I like him. Don't get me wrong. I actually do like him a lot, but I think you need to take the Campbell with letting Susak prove what he can do. And if he fails, he fails. But it's not like, oh, crap, I wish we had Sanchez. You know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah.
It's
I don't
not
think
like
there's
a
day
loss
coming where you say, well, we would have made the playoffs if we'd kept Hector Sanchez.
If we just had Hector Sanchez. Exactly. Yeah.
The argument used to be, though, to keep Susak in AAA was to get him the at-bats. But I think with this moving Buster around and Bochy not being afraid to sit down belt and put Susak back
he'll
there,
get at-bats, yeah.
Yeah, I think he'll get at-bats.
And Susak is only, 25 years old? So he's got plenty of time to come into his own.
The only danger to this, of course, is the fact that if they go with 2 catchers, because right now they have 3, and they start a game with Posey at first
and Susak at catcher.
And let's say Posey
somebody goes down. Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, if Susak,
they both have to go down though, because
well, exactly. Well, yeah. So if Susak goes down, Posey
but
goes
to play.
You take
away pinch hitting opportunities too.
But you take away pinching, you know, and also
if pinch running opportunities.
If Posey is like, let's say, yeah, he gets on first. It's a tie game, and let's say they pinch run for him, and later in the game, in the 9th or the 10th, if it goes extras, then Susak gets hurt.
Yeah,
then you have
nobody.
An issue. Yeah. So because Pablo used to be your third string catcher, your emergency catcher. They don't have that guy. But that's one of those situations that is so rare. It's only going to happen once or twice a year max that I think it's worth the risk.
Who do you think would be the guy that would play Duffy, right? Duffy would catch. Duffy would be like,
Duff man could do it all. Did he be the skinny?
I don't know who would be.
He'd be the skinniest catcher in Major League history. Bumgarner, yeah.
Romo. Romo catches all the opening pitches. There you go. There's a guy right there. Based on all that first pitch experience, it'd be Romo.
That's right.
All right, so it's going to be an interesting situation to see what happens because yeah, it could mean the end of. It's an interesting way for Hector Sanchez's Giants career to potentially come to an end, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, it really is.
Pence coming back from an
injury. You got to also wonder if no Pablo to really get him going this year. Maybe that hurt.
It could be. They're really close, right? So, you know, could be a little bit down about that. All right, let's move on to something that the Twitter sphere is. Twitter's always up in arms about something. Let's be honest. We really care. Yep. But it is worth talking about. And that is, you know, when do we start to be concerned about McGee, who's batting a sweet 188 coming into tonight. One home run, only three walks, 10 strikeouts, two RBIs. And, you know, we're talking
100 double plays.
Yeah, at least 100. We're talking, you know, 15 games in now at this point. That's 50 at bats. It's not a big sample size, but that's a prolonged slump, I would say. To go 9-for-48 is a prolonged slump, right? So is there something wrong with McGee? Is he just struggling to get going on a new team? Do we feel concerned about this? Should we feel concerned about this? Eric, where are you at with this?
I'm trying not to be too concerned. I'm really trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. But, I mean, I get he's a veteran. He's, you know, got to be able to find his own. You don't want to shake a guy's confidence for the entire year. You know, we traded for this guy for a reason. I get, like, all of Bochy's reasoning and things like that. And I've said it on the Twitter sphere that I'm trying to give him some time. But the more I think about it, the more I wonder, was he ever really that good of a player in the first place? You know, was he worth the two minor leaguers that the Giants sent away? Was it a mistake for them in the first place to get McGee? Can he ever turn it around? I'm not sure. He doesn't look like a guy that you can't tell that there's anything mechanically wrong with him. It looks like it's in his head when you're watching him swing the bat.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you give him like two more weeks and then you start putting Duffy out there, he seems to be the best choice to take over there, or you know, if he fights through it. But I don't want to get on the man just yet.
I mean, I think the problem is you shake it up a little too much if you do it this early, because is your, like, then he's essentially like your backup or something, and then Duffy has to play every day, and then so it's nicer to make a move if you're going to do this a little closer to the part of the season where you can start thinking about making moves. Yeah. When you go into panic mode this quickly, you essentially say, Duffy, you're going to have to ride out like a couple of months now. And if Duffy starts to struggle, that could put a lot of hurting on a young guy's career where suddenly he's being asked to do more than he's really ready to do, you know? And I don't think Duffy's got the temperament that would really affect him too much, but it is something to think about, I think. And if we look over, okay, let's look at McGee's career here. So he comes up with the Cubs. He only plays like a little bit there, and then he moves over to the Brewers. And he hits over 300 in his first season where he actually has like a decent amount of playing time. And then he hits over 610 at-bats. He hits 285. You know, I mean, it's a full season, right? Granted, this is early on in his career when it's like,
157 games. I mean, definitely. Yeah.
And then the next year he tanks. And then the year after that, he kind of tanks. And then he figures something out last year in Miami and gets back up to the 287. So it seems to me like he's had, you know, three seasons that you can look at and say three fairly full seasons where he actually did okay and two pretty poor seasons. To me, it's like enough of a track record that you can say this is not going to last for the entire year. Like, I think he'll get back up to the 250 range if we let him just go the rest of the season. We said this about Pablo, too, by the way. Like, where is he going to end up last year? Because he was batting around this for the Giants. It could be just that our park is a little bit hard to get used to hitting in. You know, it's a different type of park. It should kind of fit McGee's batting style because he's a gap-to-gap guy, just line drive. But, right now he's just scuffling.
I don't even feel like we're seeing like outs that like could be gap shots, but you can tell that he just missed it. Everything feels like he's turning over it, or even if he does get a base hit, everything's a pull.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I mentioned earlier, I don't know if it's something mechanically, but that could be something mechanically. Everything seems to be going to the pull side. I he had that one base hit though against Colorado to start off tying the game the other night to right field. That was, I think, the first time I'd seen him go to right field in like 2 weeks.
He's supposed to be a guy who pokes the ball out there, and that's definitely true. And right now he's not coming close to doing any of that. So, I you know, we're close to concern time, but I don't think we're there yet. I think we're a month away from making – if he's still where he's at, if he's still right around 200 or under or slightly above, whatever, it's time to do something. But I think we got some time left to give him a little bit of breathing room here. And it's not like he's the problem. The team has played poorly. It's, you know, if he was dragging down an otherwise good team, then you make a move much quicker, I think.
Well, you know, last year, don't you remember Pablo? He was hitting like 180 at the end of May.
188. Yeah.
And we were predicting if he gets up to 270, it would be like an amazing turnaround.
Yeah. I mean, we're at the end of April right now. So I agree with you. We need to give him a little bit more time. We need to give, you know, at least another month or so. He has a career average of 263. You know, he had a good year last year. So I think we just need to, you know, back off and just see what happens. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Duffy. I think Duffy would be fantastic over at third. He has no pop. But, of course, McGee also only had 4 home runs last year, and Duffy already has 1 this year. And McGee has 1. And Pablo, by the way, only has 1. you know, but he's hitting 294 right now, which is exactly his career average, by the way. So he's right in line with that. So I think we just need to give him a little bit of time. If, you know, we get to June 1st and he's still under 200, I think we need to start talking about, you know, possible replacements. Yeah. So,
and I don't know if I'm ready for Duffy to just be the everyday guy just because I think he's so valuable as a bench player. And, you know, I'm not ready to just throw that load on him yet. But that's when you can start talking about making a move for somebody.
But we shouldn't talk about it now. But that's Twitter, right? I mean, Twitter is like,
Twitter,
Twitter
35 at-bats, kill him. You know, it's like pitchforks and torches.
Twitter
and
does like, what Jesus Twitter does. All right, let's get some...
Everybody gets the flavor of the day. That's why Duffy became the flavor of the day. So everybody jumped.
Well, that's the other thing, too. It's like, and this happens on KNBR, too. Where KNBR callers come in, it's like one guy got a pinch hit one day, and it's like, we need to start that man every day. It's like, dude, you guys, you realize how baseball works? Like, baseball is a game of failure, you know? And people need to realize that, you know, the best hitters in the world fail a lot of the time. So you can't just jump on a guy because he's struggling and then get all on board some dude because he got one hit. Like, and that's what people do. And they don't understand really how this game works day to day. And people who watch it day in and day out do get that.
Guys, we just got a question on Twitter 10 minutes ago from a Jim Kinnearis. What happens if McGee is DFA'd? Is it likely? So, see, there you go. Right away.
Does he? I mean, yeah, he doesn't have like options, right? Because he's not like a guy.
They're not going to DFA him right now. I mean, that's just a stupid question.
Here's the other thing, too, by the way. Jeez. That's not what you do with him. You trade him to somebody if you do this.
God.
Yeah. You don't just go, all right, get out of here. Like, that's not what would ever happen.
Pack your bags.
Just giving away players to whoever the hell wants.
Well, thanks for the question, Kinnearis, but no, don't worry about what will happen because it's not going to happen. So there you go. All right, let's get some new favorite guys in here. Chad, start us off. It's going strong.
All right, Justin Maxwell. Look, I didn't believe in this guy, and I know we're early in the season, but right now in terms of spring training and a lot of the at-bats that I saw, I had no confidence in this guy. I know with Houston he hit like, you know, 19 or 20 bombs 1 year or whatever it was. I didn't think he looked that good. But so far this year, he's proven me wrong. That could change. Obviously, tonight he had a double, and he had an amazing catch in right field. He's tied for the team lead in home runs. He's hitting over 300. So we talked about him earlier, and he's a spark right now. So I figure you got to go with it. You know, the hot hand, that's what Bochy likes to do. And he's always out there with a smile. And I like that. I mean, you see a guy, you know, he's not like Buster Posey, who like never smiles. You know, this dude is enjoying the game right now. Who knows if he knows his days are numbered, but, you know, regardless of that fact, he is absolutely tattooing the ball right now. So I think they got to keep with him, and he's my new favorite guy.
I like the pick, man. I like the pick. Yeah, he had 18 home runs in like half a year, essentially, right? Or something like that. Let me see. I'm looking it up.
Yeah, I got to look it
up. Yeah, 315 at-bats. 315 at-bats, he had 18 home runs.
Yeah, that projects to like 32 or something like that.
It was 124 games, so it just meant he, you know, he was pinch hitting or playing defensive replacement or something for a lot of games.
Yeah, but 600 ABs, that's like 32.
Yeah, 300 at-bats, so yeah, that's pretty good stuff.
He'll run into one. He definitely will. That's why I'm glad to see
him. Yeah, he's a good athlete.
A hot hand.
He's a very good athlete. I'm going to go with Aoki right now because I'm just enjoying watching him play. He's, you know, we haven't had like the kind of Japanese style player. Shinjo was like the last time we really had this type of a player, right? And Shinjo wasn't even that kind of prototypical like Japanese style hitter where he just kind of lunges at the ball and he's already kind of moving down the line and all that stuff. I just really enjoy watching that style. He's a tough out, I'll put it that way. Anytime you get him out, it's, you know, it meant you did something because he's just up there and he's just, he seems like he's kind of on everything. He's able to make contact, slap it somewhere, get something going. And he understands what he's good at and he does it. The whole thing that people talked about was the defensive liability, which I don't think has at all been a case.
No.
So, you know, I don't see any problem there, especially he's playing left field. You know, he was playing right field, right, for Kansas City a few times, wasn't he?
So yeah, he was out there during the World Series.
Yeah. And I think he's much more comfortable as a left fielder. It's not as much defensive pressure there. So he's just been a joy to watch play the game. And, you know, he's, you know, as a leadoff hitter, he's gotten 10 walks already for himself, you know, which is pretty good at 20 games. And he's got the OBP of it's like 80 or 90 above his batting average, which is like fantastic. So it's just nice to have a guy understand how to do that, especially considering we've had to move Pagan down the order and he's really stepped in and done well for himself there. So Aoki, keep going, keep doing your thing. Maybe you'll hit a home run one of these days. That'll be exciting. I doubt it.
I always wonder when he's up there too, you watch him and you're like, could he do it? Could he actually connect for
him? You know, he could, but he's not Ichiro, right? Like Ichiro will get his both cheeks into one every now and then. He does not put the cheeks in ever. Like, the cheeks are out. The cheeks are already on the way to first.
Cheekless swing.
Yeah. But he's just, cheek you know, leg, he knows what he does well. He pokes it down the line. He pokes it over a guy's head. He pokes it through a gap, whatever. It's really fun to watch him play baseball. And I like watching guys who have a different style. And so I think that was a cool move. I wish that we were, that wasn't the only move. Like, I wish that him and McGee weren't like our big signings. I wish that we made some other big move and he was just kind of like the extra little flavor that we added on top of a big offseason, but it's fine. Whatever. I'm enjoying watching him play ball. All right.
He's fun anyway.
Yeah. All right. Eric, what do you got?
I'll go with Andrew Susek. We're talking about him earlier and how good he has been to start. He does have 5 hits in his first 13 at bats with a homer and a double, but also the fact that he's forcing his way into the lineup. And the only thing you can ask of a young player is to force his coaches to make a decision. They talk about that in spring training, and here we are early in the year again, and we had a whole discussion about Sanchez based on how Susek is playing. So Susek's my new favorite guy because he can kind of shake up things and lengthen that lineup for the Giants a little bit.
You know, like I said, he's only 25 years old, so I mean, yeah. It's nice to have a guy kind of doing that with a big upside. It's like, you know, he's not like Eli Whiteside coming in and then making him make a decision. You know, it's like, no, this kid's actually, he could be a legitimate guy to like step in when Posey moves to first at some point. Like, you still got that feeling that he has that amount of talent if he actually gets that opportunity and plays enough baseball. So yeah
we could be having we could be having a huge should the Giants get rid of Brandon Belt discussion at some point because Susek might force his way behind the plate.
I mean, yeah, it could happen. Like,
I don't want to.
Belt would be a guy you could get some value for. We don't want to talk about that yet. But
yeah, I know. No, that's what I'm saying.
Could happen.
It might come though.
Could happen.
Another few good weeks out of Susek, and the rumblings of that might start.
All right, let's keep it going with you, Eric. Who's the guy that we should hate? Let's hate on some guys.
I'm going to hit on Artie Moreno and the Angels. I don't know what you guys have been paying attention to with this whole Josh Hamilton saga.
Yeah.
And he's now been traded to the Texas Rangers, so I'm happy for him. He's
back home.
He's comfortable. Right. But
the Rangers actually treated him really well, right? When before he left, they wanted him to stay, but the Angels offered him that big 5-year thing, and it was just hard to say no to kind of thing. Like, I thought that the Rangers actually wanted him back.
They did. They absolutely
didn't work out that way. Okay.
And I feel bad because they tried to get out of the contract. Artie Moreno and the Angels tried to get out of Josh Hamilton's huge contract that you just mentioned because he relapsed, because they thought that they had put in some wording or something that was different from a normal contract. And in standard player contracts, something like that would not have been built in. And so
yeah, this is the NFL. They don't have that. Yeah.
I hate on the Angels for trying to get out of their contract just because they might have screwed up to and taking some guy's – one of his lowest points in his life to use that against him. I mean, this guy's going through it all. He's having to sell his house. He's getting divorced. Like, he's just going through the ringer. And so shame on the Angels for acting like that, and good for the Rangers for picking him back up.
That's great that the Rangers were able to do that, because he does need somebody to kind of have his back right now. And
yeah,
like absolutely. You said, he's going through a divorce. And I don't know if you know, but apparently his wife cheated on him. And
oh, wow.
It's like pretty bad. Yeah. Like had like a legit affair. And that was one of the triggers to his relapse too, was because he had had some situations in the past where he was still kind of that mindset that a lot of addicts have, where they're not 100% sure if they can't ever have a drink until they've experienced the, I tried to have a drink and then I ended up in a weird Tijuana bar trying
damn
to.
Damn it, that's me.
And, you know, but it's just like he, like you kind of have to have that relapse where you go, oh yeah, I'm a straight up addict. Like that happened to him in that one situation right there. And then he'd been kind of good to go after that. And the support of your family and the support of your employers and friends and family and stuff is very important, right? When your wife decides to then cheat on you and stuff, that definitely triggers that type of behavior in an addict. So you got to kind of feel for the guy. It sucks. He also had, of course, the situation where he threw the ball to the fan. The fan fell out of the stands. It was a dad and his kid. It's hard to deal with these types of demons when this kind of stuff happens to you in your life. And, you know,
that's why screw the Angels.
Yeah. It took him like 8 years to get to the bigs after being the number one pick. It's just like the whole thing with the guy is like you kind of root for the guy to actually get through all this stuff and be successful, regardless of the people who are like, he's a dick because he talked crap about smoking weed in San Francisco that one time. It's like, fine, you know, whatever. He's not a dick. He's just a guy who found God that helped him get over this thing.
Right.
Whatever. Got to root for the guy. And I hope that this works out for him. And I agree with you 100%. The Angels should not have been kind of.
They were just dicks.
Kicking him while he's down, essentially. Yep. Like, oh, by the way, take away the rest of your contract. You know, it's.
Right. Like, what?
Yeah. All right. That's a good pick. Chad, who do you got?
Yordano Ventura.
Hmm.
From the Kansas City Royals.
Okay. We're going back to the Royals, huh? We care about the Royals now? Tell me why.
You know, he had a couple of flares with the Giants, right?
Are you talking about the brawl? I think you're going to talk about the brawl.
Yeah.
Huh?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, comebackers that are hit to him, he has a history of staring down the player and then throwing him out, which is kind of like, all right, that's fine, whatever.
He did that against the Giants, too. What was the game he was dealing, right? And then he caught the one. He did the little, like, dance or whatever after he caught it.
Yeah, exactly. And so he brought that to another level against the White Sox last week. And, you know, ball was hit back to him. It was a comebacker. And he caught it, flared it, you know, did his little glove dance or whatever. And then he yelled at the batter, F you. And then he threw him out, and the brawl ensued after that. And my question is, why the hell? Yeah, the batter is trying to hit you with a line drive.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, it just.
That is trying to get a hit, man. Like, do you understand how baseball works?
it's incredulous to me. I mean, you know, pitchers can hit batters, batters cannot hit pitchers on purpose. With 95-mile-an-hour fastballs. That's not going to happen, okay? Yeah. It was just happenstance. And, of course, you know, the whole thing happens, and he got suspended for, you know, what, 5 games, and I think a few other players did. Samardzija from the White Sox, who was trying to throw it down, he was like WWE Samardzija. it was pretty awesome, actually. It was a very entertaining brawl, don't get me wrong, but... he's just one of those punks that, you know, he has his hat to the side. It's flat. You know, he likes to show up players, that kind of thing. He's just one of those guys. It just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know.
No,
he
it
just,
does. I know what you're talking about. I'm going to honorable mention real quick, too, since we're talking Royals. And that's Herrera for throwing 100 miles per hour behind the guy on the A's the other day.
Oh, yeah. Brett like, Lurie.
When you throw that hard, you're not the guy to do the revenge. Like,
no. Get a guy who throws 90. Guy, yeah.
Not the guy who throws 100 miles an hour. To do that, to play that out, because you're gonna kill somebody, man. I mean,
well, and Brett Lurie the day before was like, "I didn't mean to do that. I did blah blah. Don't hit me. Don't hit me. Don't hit me." And the next day, shoom.
Yeah, here it comes. Yeah, but it's just that's not the guy to do it. That's just not the guy to do it. And the Royals right now apparently are not making very many fans outside of Kansas City these days. So.
No. It's like thug life right over there in Kansas City.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to pick just Twitter right now. Twitter is so reactionary. When the Giants are doing poorly, it's not fun to go look on our TortureCast stream. It's like, I love what Twitter does when we're in the playoffs and when things are going and things are intense and everyone's rallying around the team and everything. I love that. But damn, do I hate when like some people just get way over the top salty. And then I'm also going to bring up something that happened. This is just like on a personal note, but they had the Heroes of the Dorm esports tournament of Heroes of the Storm, and that was on ESPN2. And a bunch of people who are essentially just like jocks and nerd haters took to Twitter to essentially try to give a wedgie over the internet to all the nerds who are watching their ESPN, their precious ESPN2. Yeah, people were pissed. And it was really weird. You guys know Colin Cowherd, the guy on ESPN Radio 2?
Yeah.
He had a whole rant on the radio about how if he's ever forced to cover video games on ESPN, if they ever ask, that'll be the day I quit. And like this whole thing, it's just like, dude, first of all, no one's ever going to ask you to do that because you clearly don't know anything about esports.
Because you're a douche anyway.
Yeah. But second of all, like, why do you need to hate? Why do you need to shit on something other people like because you don't like it? Like, you don't like it. That's fine. You don't like video games. We get that. That doesn't mean that all the people who are super excited about this opportunity for esports.
Yeah, they're not going to ask you to cover, like, badminton in the Olympics. It's like, but it's still a sport, you know? Just shut up.
And
this is
enjoyable for a lot of people, and it was a big moment in esports. And, like, why do you need to shit on that? Like, you could just change the channel and watch something else if you don't like it. I don't understand the whole, like, I don't like what you like, so you probably suck because you like this other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, look, I like different things than you, man. Who cares? You like what you like. I like what I like. We don't have to like the same things. It's all good. But yeah, Twitter really, really had a field day on that one. It was entertaining and also kind of sad at the same time that like people seemed to have such a problem with it. It was just, it didn't make any sense to me. So Twitter, you got some growing up to do, Twitter. Let's get on this, people. All right. We all love Twitter. Let's all just put that out there.
Oh yeah, we do.
We use Twitter all the time.
We love it and hate it. All at the same time.
All right, so let's finish the show up, of course, on the up note, which is why we will win it all. All right, I'll start this one because I just finished the last one. I'm going to say it's because we clearly own L.A. except for tonight. But, we swept L.A. when they were at their height, and that was the team to beat at the time in the National League West. And we proved that we can actually beat those guys, and we proved that we could beat their best two guys. To me, that means we're probably the best team in the West. We just don't know it yet. So we're going to do that. We're going to take down the West. We're going to go through the playoffs. We're going to win it all. First time in an odd year ever. There you go. Boom. Chad, what you got?
Following on your coattails, I think, you know, what, they played 19 games against the Dodgers this year. They're 3-1. So if you extrapolate that out, they're going to be like, you know, 12
maybe
or
like 16 and
13 and 6 or 14 and 5 or something like that. So
I like it.
If that happens, we're good.
So we just need to beat up on LA.
Yeah, beat up on LA.
No problems. Okay.
Not like 10-9. No. That's not going to work.
No. 16-3. I like that. Let's go there. All right, Eric, why will the Giants win it?
I since you guys both covered LA, and I can't really point to anything else. I mean, it goes back to the beginning when you asked me, well, how'd they do this against LA? And I was like, I don't flippin' know. I'm going to just predict that the Giants go on a 10-game win streak at some point this year, because that offense, there's going to be times where it just starts rolling. I mean, the top of the lineup with Aoki, Panic, and Pagan, when it is the three of them, they're still all hitting over 300 heading into tonight's game. There's going to be a time where that top of the order just gets on a roll. You know, you mentioned Posey actually swinging the bat, and I could see them winning. Maybe, you know, maybe not 10 straight, but I could see them ripping off, you know, a good 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe a 10-game winning streak at some point this year, and it could be the righting of the ship that they need.
I mean, just the sweep itself was, to me, felt like changed the feel of the season in a huge way. And, yeah, you're right. Yeah. If you go on one big, long streak like that where you win – you know, you sweep two or three series in a row, everything can be different after that. And yep. Anything, yeah, we're so early in the season, and people are already starting to panic. And I get it. The Giants fans have always kind of been a panicking bunch, right? Yeah. But, you know, we're talking 20 games right now, and there's no ability to truly assess this team and how good or bad it really has. It can be and has been. It's like, still no Pence, still some question marks in our starting rotation that we didn't expect to be quite like Kane, obviously, is a big deal. Don't know what we'll ever get out of this guy this season. Bumgarner struggled a little bit. You know, PV had his issues. Lincecum, still kind of a wild card. He's wild card, bitches! You know, it's like you don't know what he's going to be from day to day. He's still got that Lincecum of old in there somewhere. It's just every now and then it just comes out. But if any of those guys can get on a protracted streak of good play, this whole team can be a different dynamic. So good call, man. Good call. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. This is episode 85. That is crazy. We're closing in on triple digits here.
Hell yeah.
We're going to have to do something big for that. That'll happen this season, actually. So hopefully the Giants will be doing well when that comes around, so it's not a sad 100th episode. But yeah. But everybody check us out. We're on Facebook. You can find us just the TortureCast page. You can find us on Twitter. We are at TortureCast. You can also find each one of us individually. Chad is at ChadK21. Ben is at Fried Duck. I am at Willie Dills. And Eric is at 2OutHits. You can also go to TortureCast.com, which is our blog. We're going to be doing a lot more games from the press box this year because of the extreme generosity of the Giants to help us out there and allow us to go to more games. So look for that and more game write-ups and bonus-sodes and all that stuff. So check that out. And check us out on Stitcher, iTunes, all those places, YouTube, all the places. So go there. Interact with us on Twitter. We like talking to people. We didn't mean to make fun of the guy who asked the question earlier, but yeah. Sometimes questions are ridiculous, but please continue to send them to us. We really appreciate everybody interacting, and we're looking forward to covering this team all throughout the season. We'll see you guys next time for episode 86. All right, until then, see you next time. A boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.